I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, a running question. A busy day for President Joe Biden as questions mount over whether he should seek re-election. Immediate evacuation. New developments in the war in the Middle East, including claims by Iran-backed rebels targeting U.S. ships. Plus, prayers and praise. What Pope Francis is saying about the National Eucharistic Revival in the United States. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Montse Alvarado in for Tracy Sable. Our top story tonight, the eyes of the world are on President Joe Biden today as he welcomes NATO leaders to Washington, D.C. for the organization's 75th anniversary. President Biden is looking to use the meeting to spotlight support for Ukraine and get his battered campaign back on track. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Monse, here at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, about a mile or so from the White House, hundreds of reporters are gathered to cover the NATO summit. Now, earlier, President Joe Biden arrived at the summit trying to save Ukraine from Russia and trying to save his campaign from collapsing.
Standing center stage, President Joe Biden and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg welcome their NATO counterparts to the nation's capital. Moments later, with dramatic music playing, President Biden arrives to take his seat at a working session with North Atlantic Treaty Organization leaders gathered around a large table, posing this question.
Today, we have to ask ourselves, what is next? How can we keep making the shield stronger? One answer must be to strengthen our industrial base.
The president warned Russia is on a wartime footing with regard to defense production.
They're significantly ramping up their production of weapons, munitions, and vehicles. And they're doing it with the help of China, North Korea, and Iran. We cannot, in my view, we cannot allow the alliance to fall behind.
U.S. and European officials also saying today Ukraine is on an irreversible path to NATO membership after its war with Russia ends. And another boost for Ukraine in the skies above.
A coalition of countries has been working tirelessly to provide F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine. And today, President Biden, alongside the Dutch and Danish prime ministers, is proud to announce the transfer of F-16s is officially underway, and Ukraine will be flying F-16s this summer.
Before his trip to the NATO summit, President Biden meeting with the AFL-CIO in an effort to shore up support from a critical constituency as he beats back continued calls to bail out of his re-election bid.
And I think of you as my domestic NATO. Not a joke. Not a joke.
Also tonight, President Biden is losing some of his star power. Actor George Clooney, who recently held a fundraiser for the president, is now asking the president to bail out of the re-election race. Meanwhile, another full day at the NATO summit tomorrow. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will be in the spotlight. He'll be meeting with President Biden. And then tomorrow night, President Biden will be holding a news conference. In the nation's capital, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you, Owen. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, the drum is beating louder among Democrats to force Joe Biden to step down as the party's nominee as the Democratic National Convention draws closer. A prominent leader in the party is the latest to give advice. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric?
Good evening, Monse. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has indicated President Biden's political fate remains an open question, but she also signaled that he should re-examine his decision to stay in the race. She made the comments on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
It's up to the president to decide if he is going to run. We're all encouraging him to make that decision because time is running short. I want him to do whatever he decides to do. And that's the way it is. Whatever he decides, we go with.
EWTN News Nightly has learned tomorrow several top campaign advisors for President Biden will join Senate Democrats for a meeting to discuss Biden's future. Meanwhile, House Republicans continue to concentrate their efforts to force the DOJ and Attorney General Merrick Garland to turn over the audio tapes of President Joe Biden's interview with special counsel Robert Hur.
We all know why they don't want to turn over the audio, because it will obviously, presumably, show exactly what we all saw on that debate stage a couple of weeks ago, or Thursday last, and that's something that they've been wanting to cover up.
The Justice Department has turned over transcripts of the president's interview. However, some Republicans say that's not enough. Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna plans to bring an inherent contempt resolution that would fine Merrick Garland $10,000 each day the DOJ fails to turn over the audio tapes.
Inherent contempt is clearly within our Article I authorities, and Congress does have the power to investigate all legislative powers. Investigations are part of our legislative process, and people that interfere with these processes should be held accountable.
Will not stand by while the DOJ covers up information subpoenaed by Congress and refuses to comply with our vote holding the AG in contempt. It is not that the DOJ cannot prosecute Garland. It is that they're choosing not to because they wish to protect the president and his obedient lackey.
House Speaker Mike Johnson said he'd vote for the resolution despite having constitutional concerns about it.
If it's brought to the floor, I'll vote for it. But as a constitutional law litigator, a former constitutional law litigator, my preference is to follow the legal process and legal proceedings that protect the institution.
Democrats say this is just another Republican attempt to try and embarrass the president.
In this contempt charge, you just feel that it's Republicans reaching, trying to find something else?
Yeah, it's Republicans looking for headlines. They're not going to get what they're looking for.
Thank you, sir.
And they know it.
This is just yet another attempt by House Republicans to have the back of the former president. Every day they wake up asking themselves, how do we show him that we love him? That's just what they do.
By the way, President Donald Trump is endorsing the Congresswoman's effort, stating that House Republicans should also subpoena special counsel Jack Smith and ask him questions about his investigation. Switching gears a bit, I also want to let you know about Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She introduced articles of impeachment against U.S. Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito today. It follows calls from other Democrats wanting the U.S. Attorney General to appoint a special counsel to investigate potential violations of federal ethics laws by the justices. The New York Congresswoman says that the justices' refusal to recuse themselves from certain cases constitutes, quote, a grave threat to American rule of law. And by the way, the articles of impeachment will likely never get a vote on the House floor because it's controlled by the Republican Party. Monse.
Thank you, Eric. Definitely sounds like a busy day. For more on the mounting pressure on President Biden is Kristen Hahn, a Democratic strategist with Rock Solutions. Kristen is a public relations specialist who has worked on Capitol Hill and the White House. Kristen, thank you for joining us. George Clooney, a major fundraiser for the Democratic Party, penned an op-ed today asking Biden to step aside. How seismic is his announcement?
I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't call him a leader in the party, but certainly I think that it could be reflective of, you know, the donor community and what people are looking at. But you also look at members of Congress, like you mentioned in your reporting, you know, a little bit earlier, that members on in the Democratic Party in the House and the Senate are a little bit split on this. The former Speaker Pelosi made it clear that the president should do what he wants to do. He should take a really hard look. And make a determination, because we do need to move forward as a party, as a Democratic Party, with the nomination of our nominee.
Well, you did mention the former speaker. She took the airwaves and urged Biden to make up his mind. Do you think Biden's position is firm, or could we see him cancel his reelection campaign?
I mean, if you look at all of the communication that's coming out of the campaign in the White House, he's extraordinarily firm. You know, he's shored up support amongst key groups in the House, including members of the Congressional Black Caucus, And, you know, I think that's significant. So, you know, I think that he's indicated, I think the next couple of days, you know, when members come back to town to Washington, D.C., they're communicating with each other. They're talking. They're communicating with each other about what they're hearing on the ground, what they're hearing from individuals and their constituents back in their states. So I think that that's still unfolding. A lot of these members are still considering. But there has not been that seismic shift on the Hill yet, pressuring the president to step aside.
Well, as part of those considerations, Democratic leaders met yesterday in Washington to discuss Biden's future as well. How long will this infighting amongst Democrats last, and how much does it actually benefit Republicans?
I mean, it very much benefits. I wouldn't exactly call it infighting. I've seen what infighting looks like. This is more a serious discussion that's going on amongst the leaders, the elected leaders of the party. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we come to a conclusion, like the former speaker said. Again, we need to move forward, you know, one way or another. But yes, certainly the Republicans, I mean, as long as this goes on, we're not talking about, I pointed out right after the debate, all we're talking about is President Biden. We're not focusing on the multitude of lies that Donald Trump, the former president, just spewed during that debate. And that's been proven, that those were lies that he was saying, and he continues to do so. He's laid a little bit low, I think, probably if you're just speaking politically, smartly, not drawing attention to himself right now. But as long as we're having this debate within the party, the Republicans, you know, get to sit back and, you know, and benefit from it.
It's certainly reflected in the polls. Thank you so much, Kristen Hahn, Democratic strategist. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Now to part two of our interview with former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, where he tells our Catherine Haydro about the next steps in the war in Ukraine and what it was like working for former President Donald Trump.
You mentioned that the war between Russia and Ukraine is a top agenda item for NATO. How do you see the war between Russia and Ukraine ending?
Well, I'm worried at the moment that it's a stalemate, and that whether it's Hungary's Viktor Orban or people in this country who are proposing that we have a ceasefire and then move into negotiations, a ceasefire at this point would simply be a new de facto boundary between Russia and Ukraine. It would be entirely in Russia's advantage. I'm sorry we're gridlocked after 2.5 years, frankly, of not being as effective as we could be in supporting Ukraine. So it's a very delicate moment for the alliance, but obviously even more for Ukraine.
It is very delicate. Do you believe NATO should expand to include Ukraine?
Well, I think there's a time for it. NATO has never taken in a member that's actually involved in a hot war or had foreign troops garrisoned on its territory, because that would, by definition, bring NATO itself into the conflict. Frankly, we should have admitted Ukraine and Georgia back in April of 2008, when President George W. Bush proposed it. Unfortunately, the French and the Germans objected. I think if we had acted back then, there never would have been a 2014 invasion by Russia, let alone another Russian invasion in 2022.
You were former President Trump's national security advisor, but you have written that Donald Trump is unfit to be president again. Why is that, and what worries you the most if he is, in fact, reelected?
Well, I don't think he understands what's at stake in international affairs. I don't think he appreciates the gravity of the responsibilities that he has as president. He sees foreign affairs as being equal to the personal relationships of heads of government, which certainly is not. And so I think generally his lack of understanding of the wider world, his disinterest in it, his isolationist tendencies, I think would all work against the United States and our ability to protect our interest in a very complex and dangerous world.
If Trump is reelected, what would happen to NATO?
Well, I was with him in 2018 at the NATO summit in Brussels when he came within an inch of withdrawing from NATO. I think it's entirely possible he would do it again or put NATO in such jeopardy that effectively it would be the same as withdrawing. I think it's very dangerous for Ukraine. I think it's a signal to governments like Putin's in Russia or Xi Jinping in China, that that they are presented with new opportunities that ultimately are very dangerous for the United States.
Ambassador John Bolton, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
The Israeli military orders the evacuation of Gaza City, where there's renewed fighting. The move comes as government officials say they're making progress in their effort to eliminate Hamas. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant says Israel's military has eliminated or wounded 60% of Hamas fighters. He also said Israel remains committed to saving the hostages still being held by Hamas. Meantime, an Israeli airstrike in southern Gaza killed at least 25 people, while heaving bombing in the north has forced the closure of medical facilities. Yemen's Houthi rebels say they targeted a U.S.-flagged container ship in the Gulf of Aden. The vessel's captain reported an explosion in close proximity. The Iran-backed Houthis have continually targeted ships in the region in response to Israel's war with Hamas. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including weapons of war. Learn more about the firepower that NATO leaders are sending to Ukraine. And opening arguments in Alec Baldwin's Rust case. Hear what the lawyers had to say. One of the biggest announcements from this week's summit, NATO leaders have signed a $700 million weapons package while pledging to boost their own defense production. The Stinger surface-to-air missiles included in the deal are seen as a major boost for the Ukrainian war effort as the war with Russia continues to stagnate and resources dwindle. By shoring up the weapons agreement, the Associated Press reports that NATO is hedging its bets against a potential Trump presidency. The former president has previously suggested he would not honor NATO's founding treaty. Here with analysis is John Perichini, senior international and defense researcher at RAND, a nonprofit and nonpartisan public policy research organization. He also worked at the U.S. State Department's Bureau of Arms Control, Deterrence, and Stability with a focus on Russia and Ukraine. John, thank you for joining us. First off, why is NATO making this announcement and why now?
Well, I think what's important about this announcement now is that it's a multi-year multinational commitment to provide Stinger missiles to Ukraine, which shows the enduring commitment of the NATO alliance to Ukraine, regardless of who is elected president at the end of the year.
And from a tactical standpoint, tell us about these Stinger missiles and how they might impact this war.
Well, the Stinger has a range of about 5 miles and about 2 miles up, and it can be very important for Ukraine to get certain classes of aircraft, particularly those aircraft that are launching those glide bombs that are really posing a problem across all of Ukraine, as well as cruise missiles, which the Russians are launching against all types of targets, schools, hospitals, apartment buildings. So it can be an important contributor to Ukraine's air defense.
Now, $700 million is a drop in the bucket compared to the $175 billion that the U.S. has sent to Ukraine since 2022. Realistically, how much of a difference will this really make?
Every little bit helps. And I think the important signal here is the commitment, a multi-year commitment to provide an important weapon system that can make a difference in air defense for the Ukrainians. I mean, every day we're reading about or seeing on your program a Russian missile striking different parts of Ukraine, and the Stinger missile can be helpful in trying to eliminate some of those incoming weapon systems.
Now, John, quickly, buried in the headlines of this story is NATO saying it will boost its own defense production. Are they worried that President Trump, if reelected, would pull the U.S. out of NATO?
Well, I think it's unlikely. President Trump offers lots of bluster on NATO, but whether he really could pull out or whether the U.S. Congress would permit that after a 75-year commitment and leadership on the part of the United States in this alliance, I think is very unlikely.
John Parrucchini of the RAND Organization, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the Kremlin intensified its crackdown on any kind of government opposition. In its latest sweeping round, a court has issued an arrest warrant for Yulia Navalny. She's the widow of Alexei Navalny, one of Vladimir Putin's fiercest political foes. State media reports Navalny was charged in absentia because of her alleged participation in an extremist society. She responded on X, formerly known as Twitter, "When you write about this, please do not forget to write the main thing. Vladimir Putin is a murderer and a war criminal. His place is in prison." Navalny died in February in an Arctic penal colony serving a 19-year prison sentence on extremism charges. Russian authorities claimed he died of natural causes, but his widow said her husband had been, quote, tortured, starved, cut off, and killed by Putin. Back in the U.S., to the involuntary manslaughter trial of actor Alec Baldwin. Baldwin is accused of accidentally shooting and killing a cinematographer in 2021 while rehearsing a scene on the set of his movie Rust. He has pleaded not guilty. During opening statements, prosecutors said Baldwin violated the cardinal rule of firearm safety by pointing a gun at someone and pulling the trigger. The defense blamed the film's armorer and first assistant director for allowing a bullet to be loaded into a prop gun. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, praise from the Pope. Participants of the National Eucharistic Congress receive special encouragement. Plus, a closer look at how Catholics voted in the recent elections in France. A recent editorial praises the example of Bishop James Xu Zimin in China. The church leader turns 92 today. His current whereabouts are unknown. He was sent to prison more than two decades ago for refusing to renounce his Catholic faith. Writing in the National Catholic Register, Nina Shea and Christopher Mee say in part, quote, in 2020, Representative Chris Smith held hearings entitled, Where is Bishop Xu? Beijing's response was to impose sanctions on Smith. Some say that Bishop Xu is dead, but there is no evidence. To be sure, the Chinese Communist Party wants him forgotten. Catholics in the United States and around the world should not forget him. Spain's Catholic bishops announce a compensation plan for victims of clergy sexual abuse.
A la atención a las víctimas, al prevenir, al formar y sensibilizar.
The compensation includes for those whose alleged aggressors have died. The Spanish government says the plan lacks a guarantee of payment. The Bishops' Conference has not yet given an estimate of how many victims it can help. Catholics played an important role in the French elections. Supporters of the center-left party celebrated their victory in the second and final runoff last weekend. Now, the government is faced with trying to govern with a mixed coalition. Joining us from Rome to talk about the role of Catholic voters in the election is Frank Rocca, senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News. Frank, good to see you. What is the importance of the Catholic vote in French politics? Often we think about that in American politics, but now we're in Europe.
Well, France is almost 50% Catholic. That's the largest single religious group by far. Mass attendance is in the single digits, weekly mass attendance, but it's still certainly a Catholic country historically. Nevertheless, unlike Italy or Germany, it's never had a political party that's identified as Catholic or Christian. And that's because of the strict tradition of secularism, laïcité, the separation of church and state, which goes back to the revolution. As a result, it's been generally taboo until recently to mix religion and politics explicitly, publicly. That began to change about 10 years ago for a couple of reasons. One is anxiety about immigration, especially Muslim immigration, multiculturalism, and even Islamist terrorism. We remember in particular the horrific murder of Father Amel in 2016, who was killed in his church. So there's anxiety about that, and also about increasing social liberalism.
under President Hollande, the legalization of same-sex marriage, and more recently under President Macron, a push to enshrine right to an abortion in the Constitution, to legalize euthanasia. So as in reaction, there's been an emergence, kind of a coalescence of a self-consciously Catholic, conservative Catholic movement, you know, with rallies, demonstrations, lobbies, and that sort of thing. So Catholic vote has become a factor in French politics, after all.
Well, you've noted a couple of different issues that are important to Catholics. Do we know how Catholics voted in the recent elections there?
Well, we don't have data on Sunday's vote yet, but we do have a poll that was taken last month after the European elections, which were a bellwether, and they showed that 42% of practicing Catholics voted for the populist right or the far right, principally the National Rally Party led by Marine Le Pen. And that's more than double what it was 5 years before in the European elections in 2019. So that's a big shift.
Now, you mentioned growing fears around radicalized Islam. What explains the growth in Catholic support for the populist right in France?
Well, I think that's certainly part of it. And I think there was a lot of resistance. I mean, the Catholic hierarchy in France has been and remains very critical of the populist right, largely because of its strict opposition, severe opposition to migration, to immigration.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you.
Finally tonight, Pope Francis is extending praise and blessings for those participating in the National Eucharistic Revival in the U.S. In a letter, the Holy Father says he hopes that participants achieve happiness and spiritual prosperity after being enriched with heavenly food. The Holy Father also commended Archbishop Timothy Broglio and all the U.S. bishops for their efforts to increase devotion to the Eucharist. This will be the first National Eucharistic Congress in more than half a century, and you can follow it right here on EWTN. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless.